Go ahead and have a seat. We're starting a new series today called 2020 Vision. And so as we were gearing up for the fall and as I was looking ahead, I kind of realized that one of my kids, I don't usually call him by name, but one of them, the oldest one, who's sitting in the front row, is graduating this year. And like when he was born, it was like, he's going to be the class of 2020. And I was like, that's so far away. That's still going to be like, that's going to be a lifetime. And now we're there, right? We're at 2020. And then I'm like looking at the church and be like, we're going to be 13 years old, coming up in a few weeks. And I wanted to take 4 or 5 weeks and just sit down and say, all right, where is God taking us next? Where what's vision? There's a verse in Proverbs that says, where there is no vision, people cast off restraints. Vision has power. Vision is that picture of the future that produces a passion in you. Like, I want to pursue that. I want to give my life to that. I want to go after this. And we are looking at this series from two aspects. One is from the church aspect. What is our vision? And I'll get to where we're looking at, how far out we're looking. But I also want to do it on your level, that God has a vision for your life. God has something that's going to produce a passion in you that you're going to want to fight for, that you're going to want to pursue, and it's going to be really, really good. Really hard, but it's going to be really, really good. It's almost like sometimes you go for a drive, you know, you're like, let's go eat, and you just kind of get in the car, and you're just driving along, and what will happen is, if you do that with your wife or with your kids, you'll realize that you'll just end up someplace, right? Where there is no vision, people cast off restraints. They just kind of wander, and generally where you'll end up is probably like a McDonald's, Wendy's, or some kind of fast food, because they're on every corner, right? But if you have purpose, you're like, man, I want to go here. You have a direct path to where you want to go. Too many of us are in that vision side of life, are settling for McDonald's when the steak is available. Does that mean we're settling for wander? We're casting off. We're just kind of going through life, and kind of going from here to there, taking turns wherever it leads, wherever the dice falls, whatever happens, happens. And I don't know that's where God designed us. God has vision for us, and so what we're looking at is not the vision for this year, not for the end of 2021, we're looking at 2030. Where would God have us in the next decade? Because this is what I believe, that we kind of overestimate what we can do in a month, in a year, and we way underestimate what God can do in a decade. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, God can do far more in a decade than we can ever ask or imagine. That's kind of where we're landing this morning. It's like, if we're looking a decade out as a church or as individuals, what do you see? Let me just paint it a little bit, lean in with you guys a little bit. For some of you, you're well seasoned in life. Do you know what that means? You're familiar with that term, seasoned? You have many years of experience behind you. And you're like, this is the danger. My best decade was back then. Let me just tell you something. God's best decade for you is still coming. That's God. If you're like 80 in here and you're like, man, I've had some good years, I just want to tell you that God has selected some well-seasoned people in Scripture and done incredible things. You know that Abraham had a baby like when he was like really, really old, like 90. So if you're thinking about foster care and you're like 90 in here, listen, Abraham was 9 years older than you when he started that. You know, there's Moses. You know that he didn't start his real ministry, like his ministry, like leadership, until he was 80? Some of you are like kind of holding back saying, I'm done. I've checked out. I've accomplished what I'm going to accomplish. And I want to cast a vision for you that your best decade is yet to come. And I want to tell you, if you're like you're a teenager here this morning, and you're like 14, 15, 16, what does it look like for you when you're 24, 25, and 26? And I want to, over this series, not only our church-wise, but also personally, kind of cast a vision for you of what God can do in your life over 10 years. Now, we're going to be in John chapter 2 this morning. And here's where I wanted to land this morning is, where do we start? Because this is what we do. This is you can turn there if you want, John chapter 2. We'll have it on the screen if you don't have your Bibles. But what we want to do is we want to take an analysis of where we are, right? We'll figure out where here is. What is our what they say in the corporate world, SWOT analysis. What are our strengths, or what are our weaknesses? What are our opportunities? What are our threats? Let's determine all that we have around us, and let's begin with our vision or where we're going from our analysis of our lack or of our like weaknesses. But isn't it better to start with looking up? Okay, this is what I believe, and this is what I think Scripture teaches, is that God has far more planned for us than we have planned for ourselves, right? Is that fair to say? Like, his ways are higher than our ways? His thoughts are higher than our thoughts? Ephesians 3, he is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine according to his power that is at work within us. That his vision for our life is larger than what our vision for our life is. Let me change it this way. 10 years from now, your story will be better than what you thought it was going to be than if you just kind of did it yourself. Let me jump to the end of the story of John chapter 2. It says this, starting in verse 11, and then we'll come back and tell you the story. What Jesus did here in Cana in Galilee was the first of the signs. It's the first of the miracles. It's the first of the incredible things that he did, through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So here's how the last little synopsis of John says, looking back, he revealed his glory, that God showed off, that Jesus, like, he wowed people. He was like, man, he showed up in an amazing way. Like, when people walked out of whatever happened, they're like, that was unbelievable. I can't even tell that story and with a straight face. That's exciting stuff. And so whatever happens beforehand leads to the glory of God, and also leads to greater trust. And the disciples believed. They're like, all right, God, we saw you do that. Now we want to place our lives in your hands because we want to see you do more. So we want to get into what happened in this first miracle that Jesus does in the Gospel of John. So let me read it to you, and then we'll kind of break it down a little bit together. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used for the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water," so they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some water out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice water, or the wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best for now." See, the wedding is like the biggest ceremony of a family's life in the New Testament. Like, it was the party above every party. Like, we plan a long time for our weddings. They planned a long, long time for their weddings. They set aside wine, and they saved up their money. The wedding was the biggest party that they could celebrate as a community. And Cana is about 75 to 100 people, more than likely. And what would happen is the whole community would be invited to this celebration. And the family was known by that celebration. Either they'd be like, man, that was quite a party. That family knows how to throw a party. Or it was like, that family is pretty lame. We're not doing another wedding at their house. You know what I mean? Like, it was actually bigger than that. It was like either you were honored or you were shamed by the wedding that you threw. And so Jesus is invited to this wedding. His mother's there, and so there's a celebration, and look what happens. When the wine was gone, someplace along the line, someone miscalculated. Someone didn't save up enough money. Something happened to the wedding, and what was supposed to be a celebration, a place of joy, a place of, like, excitement, this place of, like, this is really fun and exciting, all of a sudden turned into, like, what just happened? The wine was gone. It's kind of like going to a wedding these days, and you're, like, in the buffet line, if you did buffets, and you're, like, half the crowd has gone through, and they're out. And you're standing there with your plate and fork in hand, wondering, what do you do now? Are you first in line for the dessert, or do you have to wait? You know, you're trying to factor. Like, it doesn't work well. And let me change it for you this morning. Sometimes we feel like our wine's running out. We had plans, right? We had plans of what life was supposed to be look like. We had plans for our finances, and the finances are running out. You had a plan for your relationship, and things aren't working. It just feels like the wine is running out. You had plans for your work. You had plans for your schooling. You had plans for whatever it is. You had this plan. You had this thought of what it was going to be like, and the wine starts. You know that the wine always runs out? Do you realize that in life? Like, our wine, I mean, all right, maybe you guys do things differently, but my bank account never really gets going up. It always has a tendency to go down. My refrigerator, I have four kids. All of them eat a lot. My refrigerator, I went there last night to have a bowl of Cheerios. Cheerios, remind you. All the good cereals are gone, so I'm having Cheerios. And I go to open the refrigerator. Guess what has run out? It wasn't wine. That would have been, I should have put some in there. You know, it was the milk. The milk's gone. In all of our life, as we're journeying through it, our earthly wine is constantly running out. Let me just give you the kind of the Old Testament version of what wine in the Old Testament is usually connected to joy. Like the prophets, when God's speaking through the prophets, he's talking to Israel like, you know what you could have had? The mountains would be overflowing with wine. It would be just like this joyful celebration. That we know that, right? We know that we're designed for joy. Like, we're fighting for joy. And yet we also see that our wine runs out. That we have, this morning, you're walking in, and you had a vision for your life, and you're realizing that the wine has run out, and you don't know what to do. You thought you were planning for joy. In fact, you went to church for joy. You're like, man, God has plans for me. I heard what he said in the beginning, that he wants to far exceed what I have planned. And yet you're looking at your current situation, and you're like, my wine is running out. So Mary, the mother of Jesus, knows who Jesus is, right? She's raised Jesus. And she looks over, and this is prayer. This is what we're talking about this morning. If we want great vision, where we start is not with our vision. We start with prayer. We start looking up. God, what do you want? And this is what she says. They have no more wine. She prays. Hey, Jesus, the wine's running out. And so is that what we do? When our wine is running out, when we have frustration and the vision's not playing out the way we thought it is, we go to God and say, Jesus, God, my wine is running out. My money is running out. My marriage is running out. My job, it stinks. I thought I'd be a lot further along. You come to God and you're like, God, I believe that you're powerful. Do something. This is how I view it. We go to the vending machine. We have vending machines still in your work someplace. I don't know if you take coins anymore. I think it's credit cards. And so you go to the vending machine. They have chips. They have candy bars. You put the credit card into the vending machine. You push F8, pay $3 for some Reese's Cups, and you're like expecting it to come out. And am I close to that? You guys, anyway. That's what we do with our prayer life. We come to God. He's our vending machine because he has everything that we need in life, which he does. Everything, he has it all. And we put our credit card in. We're like, God, I did this, I did this, I did this. I'm a good person. I'm not as bad as this person. That person has everything they turn to do, they turn to gold. For me, I just want this one thing, fill this one thing up for me. We put the credit card in, and then it's like it moves, and it's stuck. Right? Look at what it says. Jesus says to his mom, woman, very interesting word, we're not going to get into that. Why do you involve me? My time has not come. What he says is, not right now. No. It's in the vending machine because his power is, I read his power, and yet it's hanging there. So this is what we want to do. We want to take the vending machine. I don't know if it's this way, but we'll go, and we start shaking it, trying to, God. This is what I thought was going to happen. You're supposed to be powerful. I'm not seeing your power on display. Something, there's a disconnect. There's something going on in the software here. This is not working for me. But let me just kind of change your view of prayer a little bit. There's this thing called buffering. I don't know if you've heard of that term, but sometimes you watch, if you have really bad internet, you watch Netflix and it has that little circle, like it spins. And I think it does sometimes says buffering. Like there's a time between when it plays and when it loads. Like you're waiting for it to load. You know, there's buffering on vacations. Sometimes you have to be someplace at a certain time. Well, let's do Sunday morning. The church service, just so you know, church service starts at 10:30. Buffering is saying, hey, let's give a little space so that in case we want to stop at Dunkin' Donuts, we have 10 minutes, the line's long, they mess up my order, I got to go through again. That's buffering. Buffering is like creating space so that there's room for things to happen. Buffering is almost like a delay. It's a delay. Do you know that God delays often in prayer? Why we're talking in 10-year increments is because when we're talking about in a month increment, we expect God to move on our time, not his time. When we're talking about a 3-year increment, God, I need you to do this in 3 years. We're trying to move it on our increment, not on his. God is not only powerful, but the other thing we need to believe is that he's good. Does you know what I mean? Like, he knows what he's kind of doing. What does the Bible say? His ways are beyond our tracing out. Which, like, so the picture is looking back, and you're trying to, like, trace what God's path is for you. You're like, I can't even trace it out. It's so complex. Like, our mind can't grasp what God is doing. And sometimes we have to trust that not only is he powerful, that the vending machine has all the things in it, but he's going to give us the good when he's ready. Let's say that. When we're ready to receive the good. I want you to hear what Mary says, because it's critical. This is her response. Now, understand, most moms have a way of getting what they want from their kids. I can say that now because my mom left. So, like, they have a way of, like, using certain tools to make it clear what they want. Like, they may say, you know, I have done a lot for you in my lifetime. You know that I did give birth to you, and it only took 6 hours. But I'm going to tell you, it took 12 hours. And, like, you were a tough child. And then, they lay it. I don't know if your mom's like that. They lay it. My mom's not. So just don't tell her I said that. But they lay. They're using, like this guilt-ish or manipulation. They have a way of saying, listen, I'm going to die soon. You got to do this soon. They have a way of communicating. Like, but Mary doesn't do that. Mary believes that God is powerful. And she believes that he goes. This is what she says. She looks over to the servant. She's, like, looking around. Do whatever he tells you. She has no idea what Jesus is going to do. Jesus had already just told her no. But she's like, I think he's good, and I think he's powerful. So let's just do what he asked us to do in the meantime and see what happens. Hey, servants, I believe that God's going to show up at some point. Why don't we just kind of just listen real close? Let's just take that, whatever next step he tells you to take, let's just take it and see how this plays out. Isn't that, when we're looking at vision 10 years from now, I believe it starts for us, for personally, for you personally, or for us as a church, is sit and pray and say, our world, the wine is running out. Our communities, the wine is running out. I have friends whose lives, the wine is running out. And Jesus, the wine is running out. And I want to do what you tell me to do. One step at a time. And if I pray and I say, God, you're powerful and you're good. I'm going to trust in that. And then I believe that he's that, and I'm going to step in that direction. What does it say? His glory, he will reveal his glory. The story will be pretty good. Should I tell you? I mean, let's talk about how it ends or how the story goes. Listen to the way the wording is. I just was reading it just now, and I'm like, that's cool wording. Verse 7, Jesus said to the servants, fill the water. So they filled the water. Then he told them, now draw some water out. They did so. Then he says, they take it to the master. They do that. They did what Mary said. They said, just do what he says. Just what I don't know. It's going to be kind of crazy at times. It's not going to add up in our math world, but you just kind of do that next thing and the next thing and the next thing and see what happens. I mean, just your water may be running out in your finances. And you're praying hard for that job promotion. Maybe don't just tell Jesus that your water's running out and then do what he says one step at a time. Maybe it's relationally, maybe it's something else, and you're wherever you're losing joy. And you're like, because we want to get way down there. We're like, all right, this is where we want to get. We only can get there one step at a time anyway. Might as well do it. Jesus' steps. Can I change it a little bit for you? What does Dr. Phil say? How's it working for you? Like, you've tried to do it your way. You know what I'm saying? You've tried to do your steps your way. And it got to you to where you are. So you look back at the last decade, right? And some of you had really good decades. And you're like, God has been really good, and he's been faithful. For some of us, there are things that you look back on and it's like, man, I was really stupid. I did it my way, and it's got me into a deeper mess. And you can keep in that kind of, what do they call it, insanity thinking. Or you can have a new way of thinking, saying, all right, I don't know which way to go. But Jesus does. I'm going to do it his way. And this is what it says. Okay, so there's 75 to 100, maybe. I mean, we don't know how many guests. It's a small town. And they don't travel for hours for a wedding. So 75 to 100. And it says, again, we don't have the exact measurements, but I'll just break it out to you. They have the 6 stone water jars. It holds a certain amount, 20 to 30 gallons. It's like 75 to 100 bottles of wine. Maybe even past that. It's a whole lot of wine that Jesus makes. Well past what they needed. I mean, do you understand the principle of that? That when we do it Jesus' way, his wine will never run out. In fact, you ever know, you read scripture sometime, and you're like, anytime food is mentioned, anytime that God does something with food, you ever notice how much leftovers there are? Like in the Old Testament, like there was always more than enough. Like, in fact, the people are complaining, like, oh, we're sick of manna, give us quail. They get quail and they're like, we have too much quail. Like, it's like feeding the 5,000. There's leftovers, there's basketful. I want to tell you, our wine's running out, but Jesus' wine never does. It's more than enough. Let me just put it this way. Your joy may be emptying, your tank's going out, but there is someone you can go to who fills with joy. His wine is something we can keep going back to. I'm wondering, this is what I'm wondering. You know, we have table favors. You ever heard of table favors of guys in here? I don't know if you're following, but a lot of times at weddings, they give like these little gifts. You give them a big gift, they give you a little gift and a meal. So there's a little trade-off there. And so I'm wondering if the couple's like, yeah, we forgot table favors. Not only did the wine run out, but we don't have any table favors. And I'm wondering if Jesus is like, I took care of that too. Everyone gets a great bottle of wine right now, and they're handing out these better than their table. Or maybe it's this way. Maybe they had table favors. They're like, put those away. Jesus has something better. You know, let's use. There's his wine. Not only doesn't run out, but it also says it's better than the other wine. Here's your principle. Don't settle for cheap stuff when the good stuff's available. Don't try to fill it with things that you're trying to fill it with. When Jesus says, I have 10 years from now, I want you to look back and say, wow, God. You know, so we're starting in this series on vision. Like, God has a picture for us. God has some wine for us. Like, this next decade can be pretty amazing for you individually. And I think as it's amazing for you individually, it's also amazing for our church. This journey that we're going to go on, I think where we want to start is not like, well, we're going to reach this many people and we're going to go into this community and start this church. I think where it starts is like on our knees saying, we need your wine. You can buffer it, God. You're good and you're powerful. And you know the word I like is pivot, right? You know that word, pivot. You know what the pivotal moment or the pivotal thing, part of that pivotal thing in that story is? Mary trusted. The disciples walked away and they started to trust. Like, not only was there the wine and Jesus, there was this moment where Mary says, I trust that he is good and that he is powerful. I don't just believe it. I trust it. I'm going to be honest with you. I think there are a lot of us in this room who believe in Jesus' goodness, believe in his power, believe in his faithfulness. But when it comes to this phrase, do what he tells you to do, not so much. Because that's trust. That there's a moment where you have to decide your way or his way. Because a lot of times they're going two different directions. A lot of times you have no idea why Jesus is asking you to do something, but you better do it anyway. And the decision is, do I believe in who God is, but do I trust in the God I believe in? Do I put things on the line? Do I risk? Do I step? Do I do things that are crazy sometimes? I just want to believe that God can do more than I think he can do. I want to trust that his plan for this church is bigger than my plan for this church. I want to place this church on the altar and say, do what you want. Listen to me. Our wine will run out. Do you understand that as a church? Well, every church has a life cycle. We're going to run out. But not if we have the God who fills. The kingdom keeps going, right? And so we want to say on our knees, God, Jesus, the wine's running out, but we want you to work. Cast a vision. God, 10 years from now, we want to trust you and follow you. You're good and you're powerful. Let's get on board. Let's go. If you're a teenager in here, let me just listen to me for a second. If I could just tell you something about your future of your life. The best way forward is to pray and do what he tells you to do. But I'm just telling you, it gets awful messy any other way. It gets awful crazy. If you 10 years from now, if you want God to do more than you're thinking he's going to do, place your wine before him and then do the little things that he's asking you to do. This morning, what we're going to do, how we're going to end our worship time is we're going to take up the bread and the cup together. You know, I would like to say we have real wine for you this morning, but we're kind of not that kind of church. So you're going to get grape juice. But the way we want to take it this morning is this is like a little taster that his wine never runs out. Like in the midst of wherever joy's, you ever have a balloon that the air sucks out of? Like it's just, if your joy in your balloon is being sucked out, and you have a hole in your balloon and you're like, man, it's empty. And this celebration this morning, this communion this morning, this cup this morning is a reminder that we keep coming to Jesus because his wine doesn't run out. That whatever financial situation you're in, his wine is better. Whatever relationship that's struggling, his wine is better. What, like we come to, and I don't know what it is for you. I don't know what your frustration is this morning. I don't know where you thought the vision would be at this point. You're 58 and you're still living at your parents' house. I don't know what it is. You're just frustrated. You're like, I think I should be here. And you're like, I want the real wine, Jesus. I want to do what you tell me to do. And we're going to stop and pray because this is a message on prayer. And I just want you to place whatever you're hanging on to, whatever it is that you're struggling, whatever your wine is, the old wine, and I just want you to place it at his feet. Just talk to him. Pray over your 10 years. And if you have kids sitting next to you, if you have a kid, your kid sitting next to you, or someone else's kid, I don't care. Pray over their life. Pray over your marriage's life. Just take the next few moments to pray, and then we'll pray over the bread and the cup, and we'll come in the middle aisles and take that and worship together that way. Heavenly Father, we come in this morning and beginning this new season of school and fall, and then heading into 2020 and this next decade. And we know the story will be crazy at times. We know that the wine in different areas of our life will run out. There'll be a time where our joy will be stolen from us. There'll be a time where we'll have frustration and fear and doubt, and times we'll want to tap out and quit. But God, we know that your wine is good, that you are good, and that you are powerful, and that although we're waiting for you to get past the buffering, that buffering time is critical for what you want to do in our life. And so, God, we take this bread and this cup this morning. We remember that your wine is better. We take it to remember that we need